I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Becky Hawkins, is a natural storyteller and a great listener. She brought those gifts with her as she sat by the bedside of seriously ill or terminally ill patients for more than 30 years as an oncology and hospice nurse. And it is her compassion and warmth that encouraged so many of her charges to share their heartfelt thoughts and experiences with her. Hawkins began her career as a nurse's aide at age 19, and that exposure to the nursing profession inspired her to get a degree in nursing. Unusual for someone so young, she chose to start her career in the oncology unit in a large city hospital. She progressed to outpatient oncology, hospice, and eventually became a hospice chaplain. Upon retirement in the 1990s, she began to volunteer her services and expertise with hospice patients. She was also instrumental in the transition and care of various family members. The emotional impact of working with terminally ill patients was difficult for Hawkins. She loved the opportunity of working with the patients and families, but didn't quite know how to face the reality of not being able to save every patient. After seeing the stress it left upon her and hearing the stories, her husband suggested she begin journaling. Hawkins began to write about what she was hearing, witnessing, feeling with her patients, their families, co-workers, and visitors. From there, she started penning a column in a local newspaper entitled Beyond Statistics in 1986, which is now syndicated in 6 pages regionally. A selection of columns was assembled into Transition, a Nurse's Education About Life and Death. Hawkins is a now sought-after speaker on her book, Transitioning Wisdom, Hospice Care, and Helping People Leave the Planet with Grace, Dignity, and Love. She continues to write her column, blog, do book signings, work on her second book, and still visits patients or friends who ask her to stop in on a loved one. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Becky, and I look forward to hearing about your work with those who are transitioning in hospice. Now, first, Becky, you have written a book about transitions. Why did you write this book?
Because I spent about 30 years with people from the time I was 19 in a nursing home through nursing school and oncology and then on to hospice and home health, observing so many people in transition from being well to being very ill, from transitioning from their homes to the hospital or from their hospitals to nursing homes. And then also the transitioning that took place from this life to the next. And so I wanted to share some of my patient stories and how they helped educate me, because I think their stories matter, because dying people can teach us so much about life.
Then, Becky, what wisdom did you come away with from your patients?
They taught me that we need to learn to live this day, that we really can't correct yesterday, and we really can't borrow from tomorrow and worry about tomorrow, but that our duty before us is right now and this day and to enjoy this moment, because if we try to dwell in either one of those other places, we're missing out on this day.
Right.
They also taught me to learn how to forgive others, how important it was. So many that were dying felt that need to forgive old wounds. And then to forgive themselves for hanging on to something for so long and opening up that wound again and again. And that we're here with great purpose, that we're not born by accident, but that we're beautiful, beloved beings who've chosen to come here to grow our souls and to learn to love one another and to care for all of creation. And they taught me that the only thing that we really take with us, because we don't take anything material, is the love woven into our spirits, into the DNA of our spirits, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we take with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about how big our houses are or how expensive our cars are or how much land we own or who we know. But in the end, it's how we treat one another.
Mm-hmm.
And if we care about those who need help, like those that are hungry or those that are abused, those who are ill or dying, and that we need to really and truly honor our brief journey here and to look at, you know, the footprints of others who've gone before us and to be reminded, how do we want to leave a footprint?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of footprint do we want to leave here?
I think more and more people need to spend some time in hospice. What do you think? Because I'm
yes.
not seeing this caring about your fellow man, especially when you get into the political realm. I'm seeing so much divisiveness, and it saddens me to see this, but I don't know what you can do about it.
I don't either, and I try not to. What I'm learning from them also is to try not to condemn or judge, because that's where I have been before, just thinking, you know, why are they behaving that way?
Right.
And what these people teach me is to observe without judgment,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
then to understand that they're on their own journeys, and hopefully they will run into someone or have something come to them in their life, their journey here, that educates them on how precious and brief this is, and that truly we create our peace and our happiness in how we mm-hmm. reach out to one another,
right.
how we care for mm-hmm. one another.
I see this. I have a friend that I've known for a long time on Facebook, and she is so negative. She apparently is a staunch Republican, and as you say, I observe. And mm-hmm. I always will make a little comment, because she also says that she's a Christian and all. And I sometimes will write a little note like, what would Jesus think about this? Or what would Jesus
mm-hmm.
say about this? And
mm-hmm.
she said to me, are you upset with me? I said, no. I said, we all have a right to have our own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
But deep down, I'm concerned, because I believe that what we send out comes back to us.
Yes.
And I see so much of this negativity coming out of this woman. You know, I think it's all right for occasionally seeing some negativity, but this woman, every day, it's the same thing. And I feel so sorry, because I know she is bringing things back to herself that
yes.
she doesn't want.
No, because that is kind of, that negativity, I think, rises out of our fears. And when we put that out there, like you said, yes, that's just the natural law of attraction. What we put out there, we're going to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And if we continue to fan the fire of fear, then it grows, and it goes all out around us. And people can feel that.
Right, right.
And what she would want, I would hope, is to know some healing and some peace in understanding that all we can control is us.
Right.
This person. And to seek, you know, some healthy choices in what we're thinking about. You know, to really get out and enjoy part of the earth or care for the earth, to do something for some animals that maybe need a home. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
so many avenues where we can invest our energies doing really good things that will come back to us,
right.
instead of causing so much negativity and fear and pain in others. It's just such a brief journey here. My grandfather
right.
used to tell me, Becky, even if you live to be 110, it goes by fast.
Right.
So think
right.
about what you want to do with this time.
Well, I see that fear is really a lack of faith.
Yes.
Deep down, you know, people can profess to be Christians, but if they're fearful, they're lacking the faith. And
mm-hmm.
with faith,
mm-hmm.
you don't have fear. It's like when I had cancer, and the doctor used the fear technique of,
mm-hmm.
well, you'll be dead in 6 months. Well, a lot of people fall into doing what the doctor said.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. I said, well, I make the decision about my life. You tell me the pros and cons of surgery and chemo. So with faith, you don't necessarily fall into what other people are falling into, but you're able to think rationally and make rational decisions. So I'm a strong believer in faith, and as you see, it served me well because 38 years later, I'm still here.
Yes, it serves you very well, and I'm so thankful that you're writing and sharing these ideas, because what we have learned from this information you're speaking of is that our thoughts have so much power.
Mm-hmm.
And if we change our thoughts, we can actually change our world.
Right.
If we're spending so much time in that negativity, we're gonna have to deal with all that heaviness. But if we actually take the time to review, what am I thinking? That's not going to bring anything but fear, more fear into my life. Let me look in this new direction and think some positive affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
I am healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I am strong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving. I'm forgiving. I'm full of life and joy. And try that. You know, try using those healthy, positive affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And then also getting out of yourself and dwelling on yourself all the time.
Right.
Of course, especially after new diagnosis, people are dwelling on themselves with the fear of what am I going to do, how am I going to make this better. But like you said, okay, must move out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And move into positive ideas about holistic health.
Right. And
mentally.
Serving others, as you said. That's so
and
important.
Yes. Because that is like feeding your soul and your body with spiritual vitamins, you
mm-hmm.
know, some kind of wonderful joy, all of those wonderful benefits that you get from feeling good, from serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
It just blesses you physically and spiritually, mentally, emotionally. You can't get too much bad for helping others.
Now, Becky, would you tell us some of your favorite stories?
One of my favorite stories is when I was working on hospice, and I was asked to visit a precious gentleman. He was in his 80s, Pentecostal minister, and Carl was dying from the damage to his heart and lungs from chemo and radiation from the
mm-hmm.
70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in a rural area. The little church that he was the minister of was right next door. And he had us put his hospital bed in front of the picture window. Remember the picture windows that
mm-hmm.
a lot of homes had years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And so he could see that church and this mature oak tree, maybe 200 years old out front. And it was just a precious setting. Well, his wife was his second wife because his first wife had passed, and this wife was from his congregation, so she didn't want to call him by his first name. She felt like that was irreverent. So she would just call him by Brother Smith, and they were just adorable. But she was afraid, and so she would stay in the kitchen most of the time, but he wanted to talk because he was not afraid to die. And sure enough, not too long after I had started visiting them, I got the call that he was not doing well and to hurry over as fast as I could. And when I got there, Annie ran back into the kitchen. But he was blue, very blue. He was not getting good oxygen. So he said, Becky, can you pick me up and put me in my bed? And I said, yes, I can. And I did. I literally picked
mm-hmm.
that little fella up, got him into his hospital bed, and I crawled in behind him and straddled him and held him straight up because
mm-hmm.
he was agonal, and he just could not get air. And we were sitting there, and I had my fingertips on his shoulders holding him up, and he tapped my fingertips, and he said, oh, sweetheart, do you see what I see? And I said, no, tell me. He said, the room now is full of angels.
Mm-hmm.
He said, they're up here on this side on the ceiling, and they're up here on this other side. He said, it's so beautiful, and he said, Oh, Annie, I've got to go. I love you. I'll see you again. And he raised up his right arm towards the ceiling, and he said, oh, my Lord, my God. And he fell back against me, and he was gone.
Mm. Mm.
You know, people ask me, Carl, many times, why do you do the work that you do? Don't you find that depressing? to me, that was one of the greatest joys of my life, to be there and to be present to that parting of the veil where that transitioning was taking place.
Right, right.
A huge gift.
Then, Becky, do some of the stories that you've heard of near-death experiences change what you believe about spirituality?
Yes. Yes, it did. Because so many of these patients will share with you the pre-death visions, as well as those who shared with me near-death experiences. And that just, that really changes things. Whenever they're visiting with you, I would go in, they would be not doing very well, and say to me, you know, my sister is here. This one little lady, cute as could be, she wouldn't turn down a drink of whiskey and had smoked several cigarettes in her day. And she had a real rough, you know, that rough cigarette voice. And she said, Becky, my sister's sitting over there in that corner, and she's been dead for over 10 years. And she said she's come here to help me cross over. And I just told her she needs to cool her jets. I'm not quite ready yet. She said, you know, she means well and everything, but I'll tell her when I'm ready. And she said, what do you think about that? And I said, well, I think that's just wonderful that she's come to be with you. And I went up to see her the next day, and she was gone. But they just being able to be a part of that, you know, where they're talking to you about their loved ones that have gone on. And my brother had a near-death experience. He was diagnosed with lung cancer, and within a few, a couple of weeks or so, we went to, they said it's going to be so many days before we can get you to the oncologist. We traveled about, an hour and a half away to a sister's house for a birthday party, and on the way back home, he started chilling. And I said, can I take you to the urgent care or ER to see if we need some antibiotics? And he said, no, I'd rather go home and get in the recliner. He lived with our dad. Take some Advil, and I'll call you if I don't feel better. Well, I had no more got home than he was calling me, and all he could do was gasp. He couldn't even speak, just gasping. I said, honey, I'm calling an ambulance. I'm on my way, and I'll be right there. So I hung up, and I called my dad, who was in the other end of the house, on his cell phone, and said, Daddy, get into Jeffrey and get him up and hold him up. Maybe he's got some kind of occlusion there. Help him, see if you can help him breathe. When I got there, the ambulance was there. They were getting ready to load him, and he was blue, but he was breathing just barely. Got him there, went to the hospital, transferred to a big hospital, and we were there for 10 days, started the radiation and chemo because the tumor was wrapping around his aorta and his lungs. And then they said, you know, you just don't, I don't know that we can help you. And my brother said, I want any help you can give me. I want you to start radiation as soon as you can, because I don't want to choke to death if I can keep from it. Okay, so we got home after that was all started. And, of course, you know you go to radiation every day. So I'd drive him an hour over there, an hour back. And one day when I was driving him over there, he tapped me on the shoulder. And he said, I about died that night at the house. And I said, well, no kidding. I said, you were purple when I got there. He said, no, I about died. And I turned to him and I said, what did you see? And he said that he, when he was choking, all of a sudden he was out of his body. And he was in this warm, beautiful light, this beautiful room, no more pain. And he sees our mother approaching him on his left. She died 2002. And on his right, a friend that had committed suicide just a year before approached him on his right side. And he said, oh, please, 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 not yet. And my mother turned to him and said, then breathe, son, breathe. And he was in the ambulance. So the gift of that was so amazing, because he was afraid that he would not make it on the other side, because he had had a rough life all of his young life. He'd been in AA for 15 years and was doing very well, but he was troubled by his past. Seeing my mother, which blessed him tremendously, knowing that, you know, there is this other life, and this friend who had committed suicide, that changed his thinking as well,
mm-hmm.
because he saw that. Because we had been told if you weren't good enough or if you committed suicide, you didn't get to go there, that
mm-hmm.
you went to a place called hell.
Right.
Well, I don't believe in that literal hell anymore.
No.
But when my brother passed, a year later, he passed, I think, with much more confidence and much more peace than he would have if he'd have died that day.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been okay on the other side. He would have known that after he passed. But in that passing, this is what I hope for with this book, with these stories that these people have shared with me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is to help them to know that it's good to not be afraid to be your authentic self. Live your life. You're precious. You're beloved. Be you. And do not be afraid when it's time to transition,
mm-hmm.
because that's all it is, a transition.
Then, Becky, can you tell us how the listeners can help ease the transition of the people they love when they reach that point?
Yes, I think that they have taught me over the years to understand the most valuable thing we do is to just be present.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they will help you know if you listen to them and give them opportunity to tell you. Sometimes we just need to be still and hear them. Some people want you to say nothing. They want you to talk about the weather, talk about your children, talk about your pet. And other people want to be frank and talk to you about everything that they want.
Mm-hmm.
I want this and this and this and this at my funeral. I want to tell all of my relatives how much they mean to me. I want you to fill the house and bring everybody in. Let's have some iced tea. Let's have some pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring these people in and let me express to them what they mean to me and what they've given to me in
mm-hmm.
my journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we not try to force our opinions or our feelings so much on them. This is their death,
mm-hmm.
their life and their death.
Mm-hmm.
And to just love them as they are, where they are. And you, too, could even share, maybe. Let me share with you what you've given to me in this life, how you have blessed me
mm-hmm.
with your acts of kindness, with the way that you've trusted me, with the way that you've guided me, with your companionship.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much in each scenario that can be right if we're sensitive to
mm-hmm.
and reminded of. That it's the love that we share with one another,
right.
the respect that we share for one another.
Right. Then, Becky, could you tell us about your book and your speaking program and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes. My book is called Transitions, A Nurse's Education About Life and Death. And you can find it on my website, LadyHawkPublishing.com, L-A-D-Y. HAWK Publishing.com. It's also available on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
My website has stories, patient stories, audios, visuals, all kinds of things on there. And it also has the digital version of the
mm-hmm.
book on there.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact me on my website. There's a place where you can get in touch with me through email and I can respond to you. And I would love to hear from any of you that would like to visit with me, or if you want to schedule a speaking engagement. I do motivational speaking, book signings, lectures, trying to help educate people about what dying people can teach us about life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Becky. This has been very interesting, and it's something that I have not had previously, and I think it's important that people have at least a beginning knowledge of the transition at the end that we all will go through.
Yes.
So I appreciate this very much.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of your show, and bless you as you journey on as well.
Thank you. Denise Marie, the publisher of A Distinctive Style magazine, has outdone herself in the winter issue, available at www.adistinctivestyle.com. For your pleasure, Denise Murray has brought together what reads like a who's who of Hollywood, Broadway, and Nashville stars, including Brad Pitt, Hugh Jackman, Anne Hathaway, Dolly Parton, Matt Dillon, Jeremy Irons, and others. Each talk about their career and lives by way of written and audiovisual media. Brad Pitt, the amiable Hollywood heartthrob, actor, and philanthropist, graces the cover and is featured in an exclusive interview in which he talks about balancing marriage, a large family, and a new film. Hugh Jackman, highly acclaimed for his recent role in Les Miserables, for which he won a Golden Globe Award and has been nominated for an Academy Award, talks about that role and his family. Denise Murray says Hugh Jackman is a sincere person that truly loves his family over anything else. Anne Hathaway, who also won a Golden Globe Award for her role in Les Miserables, talks about her recent marriage, motherhood, and career. Her singing of I Dreamed a Dream in Les Miserables was surprising to me and also memorable. Matt Dillon in Promised Land, where big business descends on an economically deprived community with devastating results, present a story that is often repeated in America and needs to be highlighted. And Dolly Parton, one of my favorite actresses, songwriters, singers, and philanthropists, talks about her personal philosophy that resulted in a fantastic career from her book, Dream More. Beyond these stories of famous people are stories of social issues, such as genetically modified foods, global warming of the polar ice caps, childhood cancer, chemicals in your body, the harmful effects of farm-grown salmon, and others. For example, do you know the top cereals likely to contain genetically modified organisms? Or do you know how rapidly the ice caps are melting? You won't want to miss this exciting winter issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Debbie Campanella, did not give me a biography or picture, and I suspect that she may want to remain somewhat anonymous. I do know from my experience with her on Facebook that she is always available to help others with prayer and concern and is one of the most compassionate people that I know. I know you will enjoy her interview. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Debbie, and I look forward to hearing about your experience with acute leukemia. Now first, can you tell us when you were diagnosed and why you sought medical help?
I was diagnosed on February 20th of 1976. I sought medical help because, in my opinion, anyone with acute leukemia is very sick, very symptomatic. I would brush my teeth then, and my gums would bleed, not just a little, but quite a bit. And it got to the point where I could just push my teeth with my tongue, and my gums would bleed. I had bruises over, I'd say, at least 80% of my body, a headache that would never go away or subside. I had a lot of pain in my sternum, which I found out later is where a lot of the leukemic cells were located and caused anemia and weakness. And I could hardly walk 10 feet and would have to sit down. I just would be out of breath.
And what was the doctor's prognosis and what did he offer you?
Well, through the bone marrow aspiration and blood work, they discovered I did have acute myelogenous leukemia. In 1976, that was a bleak and grim diagnosis. People just weren't cured from that. His offer was chemotherapy for a protocol of 3 continuous days and then monthly injections and pills. He was just saying that was more of a remission-based protocol. It never really stuck with anyone. And at first, he said that if I had done nothing, I probably would have been gone in a couple of more weeks without any kind of treatment. And at the time, I said, okay, I guess we have to do this treatment. And I was admitted to Upstate Medical Center in Syracuse under the care of Dr. Jack Goldberg. And he was in his fellowship at Upstate and Arlen Gottlieb at that time. And they just really didn't offer any hope. They were at the point of, I was asking, well, how will I die? I didn't want it to be painful. And I did take that 3 continuous days of chemotherapy.
And then what else did you choose to use for your treatment?
Well, my mother and my sisters and my family would come in every day to visit me. At that point, I was violently ill. My hair, you know, fell out. I was, couldn't hold anything down or in and very, very sick. And I told my mother, well, I guess this is it. You know, I guess I'm going to die. And she said, oh, well, why are you going to die? I know that's what the doctor said, but you don't have to die. Jesus will heal you.
Good for her.
And and she, you know, very matter of fact. And I was so surprised because I didn't know that she knew that or believed that to that extent. And I said to her, okay, well, that's what you think. And she said, well, just believe that I believe that until you can believe that, because you will. And every night, my sisters and my mom, my brother-in-laws would circle my bed and pray for me. And the thing is that I wouldn't have known the difference at the time. And I would have several bone marrow aspirations to see the progress of this as well in patient. I was in there for a month. So every couple of days they would come in and I would have a bone marrow aspiration, blood test, platelets, blood transfusions. And anyway, I was in reverse isolation for my benefit because I had no cell counts. And one day the doctor came in and he did his usual bone marrow aspiration. And I was laying there on the in my bed face down, and I saw like a flash to my left. And I looked to see what that was because it was, just, you know, shouldn't have been anything any different. And I saw Jesus there. And, you know, I knew it was Jesus, but it wasn't like any picture I'd ever seen of Jesus. It was more of a, just a knowing. He was there for just a few seconds, and he looked straight at me. I did not see his feet. His hair was cut unevenly. He looked very Middle Eastern, darker skin, tan leather type of skin, a lot of blonde highlights in his hair. But I saw the scars on his hands because he did put his hands out like towards me. They had to tell me that that bone marrow was over, and those are painful. They can't do anything much to for the pain. They can numb the skin for the instrument, but you can't do anything about it. They would go in and take a, even a little chip of bone out to see, you know, along with the aspiration of the bone marrow. From that time, the doctor said to me, what's going on? He said, you look like you're shining, like radiant. What happened? And I told him, and I told him that I wasn't going to die. And he just looked at me, and I'm trying to convince Jewish men that I just saw Jesus. But from that time forward, I got better. To the astonishment of not my mother and not those praying for me. Even my brother-in-law, who drove a library truck, would stop at every church and tell them that we needed prayer. So the prayer chains were on.
Mm-hmm.
I just got better, and I kept telling them. I just, all fear was gone. I had no more fear. I didn't think about dying anymore. I just continually got better.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell everybody who came into my room, and to the point where they sent me a psychiatrist and told me I was in denial, the denial part of the terminal
mm-hmm.
diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that I was healed. I told the doctor that I could not take any more chemotherapy if I believed I was healed.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting Social Security payments through death benefit. My father passed when I was a little girl,
mm-hmm.
and I was getting those and really annoying the Social Security Department because I was sending back my checks
mm-hmm.
and saying, I just couldn't say, how can I say that I'm healed and collect benefits, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean,
mm-hmm.
that said that here's your disability. And it was just an amazing thing. The doctor said that no one else's bone marrow ever took so long to grow.
Mm-hmm.
They could see it, but that the cells were so tiny and there was such a change that they wrote it up in medical journals
mm-hmm.
that they had never seen anything like that in their petri dishes.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they did offer me MER vaccines, but ultimately that made me immune to tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, that was the protocol. It came out of a computer as chosen after I'd been down, turned down three times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then I said, you know, I just can't take these things anymore. I believe that I'm healed. And Dr. Goldberg said, well, I wish I could have told you that I didn't think you needed any outpatient chemo or any treatments. But I'm your doctor. I have to go with, you know,
mm-hmm.
with that. But he said that I will never tell another patient that they will die. I will never tell anyone else because I just saw a divine intervention, a miracle,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have the last say.
Mm-hmm. Good for him.
And my whole mind, he's in Clifton, New Jersey now. He's
mm-hmm.
Had a hematology oncology. I have written and talked to him. I was told I wouldn't have children. My first son was born on his birthday. they wanted me to abort that baby. They said there's no way that it was probably a mole pregnancy. There's no way that it would be normal. And I went on and I have four children, grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So it's been, since 1976, 37 years, it's
mm-hmm.
never, ever been a sign or a symptom since. I have never had even been anemic.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've had a healthy life, and I just really know that I was healed through the prayers of people. My faith just soared. Everyone was beautiful. I couldn't even find anything wrong with anything or anyone through that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a love that I never had for anyone, and I pretty much hated myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped hating myself and others. I had forgiven everyone and everything. And it was just, my whole way of thinking changed. My whole mind changed.
Mm-hmm.
My faith just mm-hmm. grew and exploded. And even the naysayers and the people who said that's a remission, I would say no. And my mother would say, no, that's not a remission. That's a cure. You'll see.
Mm-hmm.
She's healed. And I am, Carl. And
so it was a very quick healing, wasn't it? It was not very long term.
No. You have to go in. I had to go in weekly blood tests. I had to go monthly,
mm-hmm.
3 months, 6 months, once a year. I had to do that for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And never again did they ever see anything. It was from that bone marrow on when I had my vision of Jesus and my faith just, it was like an implant of faith,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an impartation of this mm-hmm. is what you will be, this is what you have. It wasn't like, well, you're still sort of kind of sick. No, it was,
right.
I just got better.
Right. Weren't you written up in some journals?
I was written up in many medical journals, and I was actually front page featured in the National Enquirer, of all things. I always mm-hmm. thought that that was a rag newspaper, but right. that article was real, and it was true. They interviewed Dr. Goldberg, who said he had never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1980 in the mm-hmm. National Enquirer.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, it was written up, and Dr. Goldberg said he still tells all his patients, all of them, about what he saw, what happened with me, and it gives them great hope.
Right.
And nowadays, you know, there's much more that they can do with leukemia and bone marrow transplants and such, but in that day, no.
Mm-hmm.
That day, they did not have, I mean, leukemia was pretty grim. And he still says when he has a hard time getting someone through, he remembers me, he thinks of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that he doesn't have a final say.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, and could you elaborate on how you have changed as a result of this experience?
Well, I have forgiven all of the past. I had a lot of hurts in my past that I needed to forgive. And I forgave those. And I didn't just say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. It was like I really did forgive mm-hmm. people. I mm-hmm. really did just put it aside. And my whole life since, I can't even stay angry at anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had a life like everyone else where people hurt you and you hurt others and things happen. But I cannot stay angry. I have such a love and a care, which people tell me it's to a fault,
mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you just have to let things go and let things happen. I can't just hand people what I have and how I feel.
Right.
I can tell them, I can pray for them, I can try to work with them, but I really think that it's just, it was a gift, it's a mindset. I have a hard time. I get very nervous even if I have to go to a physical exam mm-hmm. mm-hmm. with a doctor or even with a dentist because I think that they will look for things
mm-hmm.
to find wrong with you, plant seeds in your mind and
right.
such as that.
Right.
And I just refuse to go along with that. I do what I can to, you know, stay healthy. And I really think that if people weren't so darn angry all the time,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
if they would just forgive people. And that really, you know, bothers people that you forgive them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do it to bother people,
right.
but I think forgiveness is such a part. I always want people to know, get over it. You have so much that you can use that's out there to help you. And some people will just take a diagnosis and just run with that.
Right, right.
I refuse to do that for anyone. I have seen so many miracles since,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about mine in depth and detail, but I've seen other. I've seen things that I just cannot believe what happened.
Right.
You know, how prayer changed things, how an attitude and a mindset. And but I tell you, unless you make up your mind, you know,
right.
that you just stay where you are
mm-hmm.
if you don't change your thinking. And a lot of people say, well, you know, you can, there's so many other religions. I don't have a religion.
Right.
I have a God,
I
you
don't.
Know.
I don't either, Debbie. I don't have a religion
yeah.
either.
No, I don't. No, not at all. It wasn't about a religion. It was about Jesus. It was about what I saw, what I believed, and when my mother said to believe that she believed, I had to trust her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had to trust that someone really believes that.
Right, right. Now, Debbie, what advice do you have for others faced with the diagnosis of acute leukemia?
Well, my advice to them would be to not take a diagnosis to heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a diagnosis. It's what you have right now, like a sunburn.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have a lot of tools to use for your own good, for your own health. You don't just need to take their medicines. So many of those medicines are just going to make you feel sick, bring your mood down, bring your emotions down, make you sad and sick.
Right.
If they choose to do that, I think that they should work in conjunction with other holistic methods, research, see what's out there. If they're too weak or too sick, people are always asking, what can I do to help? So you can get your research team going.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to, like, go within. I believe everyone has that measure of faith within them.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to feed the faith, not feed the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And to just pray. And I realize a lot of people are prayed for over them, and they still don't get healed on this earth. I think that, you know, I have no idea why not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand when that happens, but it happens. And that's way above anything I understand.
Right, right.
But it is still there to draw on, to believe, just change their way of thinking, change their way of doing. Evidently, it didn't work because you're sick.
Well, I think sometimes people deep down are not ready to be healed. And so our prayers are not effective because they need other experiences that they get only by being ill. And so I think that plays into it. But I also believe that what we send out comes back. And so sometimes there's, again, something that we need to resolve within ourselves. We need an experience to learn from before we can be healed. So it's not a fault of God or a fault of the person who is trying to help, but it's just part of the plan for that individual that there's other things they need to learn before they can be healed. And so I think it's always a success anyhow, because it probably has moved them closer to what it is that they need to resolve.
Absolutely. 100% agree with you. Absolutely. You're always learning lessons.
Right.
And for me to learn that at such a young age, I can just imagine what my life would have been without that illness,
mm-hmm.
what direction that I would have taken, because with some of the things that happen, I have talked to psychiatrists that say, I just cannot believe, you know, with hearing some of your things in your background,
mm-hmm.
that you still have this attitude that you live with today. You're not angry at others. You don't hold things against people and situations, because you just learn how to get over that, how to get past that.
Right.
You know, I don't think that many hurts that people get from others are deliberate. I'm setting out to hurt you.
No.
I think that happens, but a lot of it is perception. It's your mind at the time. Something could have happened to you at one age that wouldn't faze you at another.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that you are constantly learning lessons. I know I still am.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, and I try to take note of those lessons and learn from them.
If we're open, Debbie, we're all learning lessons every day.
That's right.
Right.
That's right, but there's some people that just think that they have all the answers and know it all and are mm-hmm. not open,
right.
and it's
right.
their way,
right.
and doctors are like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's the way that they are taught. Not all doctors. I've run into a few, and now, you know, many that don't think that way, but it's there are many that's,
right, right.
You know, here's your diagnosis, take it, sorry.
Right.
You know.
Right. Debbie, I know you help a lot of people on Facebook with prayer and all, and I didn't know if you have services, products, or books, but if so, would you tell us about them and also how listeners can find out and buy these things or subscribe to them if you have them available?
Okay, well, what I can say is my book is the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
My service to others is prayer, I will be glad to speak with anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
My products, I mean, I think last year I may have taken 3 or 4 Advil throughout the year for a TMJ problem.
Mm-hmm.
I always will reach for what's natural first. I think that you really need to watch what you eat, how you think, the air you breathe. But that is my book and my service.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to reading your books
mm-hmm.
and learning from them, and looking forward to reading your new book that came mm-hmm. out in November.
Mm-hmm.
And before I recommend things to other people, I like to see that they have worked, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they have to research on their own and be very careful
right.
of what they're, you know, putting into their minds.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I am I'm always willing to pray for others and to help them with their walk. They can speak to me on Facebook. I don't have, you know, an mm-hmm. internet site of my
mm-hmm.
own or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I am there. They can, they, you know, wanted to contact me, they can contact me through you or through Facebook.
Right.
I'm sure there's other Debbie Campanellis, but
mm-hmm.
if they see that the one that's your friend, that's
mm-hmm.
me.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Debbie. It's mm-hmm. been interesting, and I know it will be encouraging to those people that are faced with the diagnoses like you and I that are have been told it's terminal, that you only have a certain number of months, etc., and that I know that at such times people are looking for something that is encouraging, and this will do it. So I thank you.
Well, I hope it will. They have prayer with them no matter where they are. They can always pray.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my two websites, www.beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on all of the shows that I have done regarding my new book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You may also purchase the book if you or a loved one have lung cancer and are interested in using natural alternative interventions. On my other website, www.holistichealthshow.com, you will find all of the past shows from the Holistic Health Show available for free listening. You will also find a sign-up sheet for a monthly free newsletter on healthy holistic aging, and a sign-up sheet to have the Holistic Health Show sent to you following each broadcast on BBS Radio. You will also find my previous book, Healthy Holistic Aging, that was published in 2009, that tells you how you can live into your later years free of chronic illnesses and prescribed medications, as I have. You will also find some ebooks. And one that is relatively new is on stress management using a holistic approach and sleep using a holistic approach. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I wish you a great week. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.